morning, everybody. Thank you so much for joining us for our weekly Tallahassee Tourism Industry Zoom meeting. And again, thank you all very much. And great to see so many wonderful faces. Again, just as a matter of housekeeping, I'm sure y'all know the drill by now, but I have to say it. Please mute your microphone. That is the lower left. Again, please mute it. With so many people in the meeting, it's really important that we all do that so everybody can hear. So again, please mute your microphone and then unmute it when you wish to speak. So again, thank you very much for making time to be with us today. Again, we've got an incredible community, and we've certainly an incredible industry, and we are still riding out this storm together. Granted, we're in different boats or different ships, but we certainly are navigating this storm together, especially now as we are seeing the COVID-19 numbers going up in our community, around the state, and around the country. So, I believe, are clearly on some shaky ground right now. But as we know, we're going to get through this together and ultimately be a stronger destination. But we are very much in the middle of the phase two reopening again. And slowly reopen businesses in our community. So as we know, COVID continues to be an ever-evolving situation on a national, state, and levels. Here in Florida, there are now more than 80,000 cases. That has added more than 24,000 in a week. Typically, we get about 6,000 in a week. So that's what it's been running, anywhere 5,000-6,000 a week. 1,000 new cases. Granted, a lot of them are with the younger population, but regardless, the cases are up. I did hear we have about 20% of the cases testing positive are asymptomatic, 20%. So again, we are going to have Claudia, Blackburn, Leon County Director of the Health Department. So, and the return engagement next week to give us an update on the situation here with COVID. But for right now, there are a total of 452 cases here in our community. Again, that is increasing by about 34%. That's about a level from where we were before, but however, the percentage of positive cases is trending up, and emergency room visits are also trending up. Again, a lot of tests are still pending. So again, a lot going on there that we need to be mindful of. Sharing a few other updates, as we know, the protests continue around the country and in our community. Of course, while the COVID-19 pandemic is expanding, so as we hear and we see signs that say like defund the police mantra, a lot of that we've all heard and seen it on the media. And I want to take a minute to say I truly don't think anybody actually believes that there should be no police to serve and protect communities. Frankly, I believe that, like, protests are calling for a change in police priorities and how they service the community and how they operate and what priorities are being funded in police. I mean, in the commission meeting last night talked a lot about increasing de-escalation training and addressing mental health implications, both in crime scenes and among the force, and perhaps even the creation of a new behavioral science unit within our sheriff's office here. So again, those are things that are being contemplated in our own community. And again, as we know, these peaceful protests taking place, not just here locally, but around the country, have really raised the collective issue of systemic racism to a level of discussion and action that I've not seen in my lifetime. So, I mean, I'm happy to see these peaceful protests and community dialogue are in fact, you know, affecting long overdue change. So we know these protests are about, you know, truly equity, justice, and equality. And again, I am certain that the county and city leaders and the citizens of this community certainly recognize the pain and purpose of these protests. And I am seeing this community taking steps now to address the changes that are needed. We had a lot of discussion in the commission meeting last night. Black lives matter, and it is all up to each of us, every one of us, to stand against racism and discrimination and injustice wherever it exists. And in fact, on Monday, the Supreme Court ruled, and I'm sure many of y'all saw this, that a landmark civil rights law protects gay and transgender workers from workplace discrimination. Again, taking a long overdue new step to address discrimination and move this forward in positive change. So change is happening, long overdue changes, and certainly more change must come. And again, I just want to say to everybody, just let it begin with us. We all have community here. We live in a wonderful community. It's certainly the best country. And again, change must come, and let it begin with us. So shifting gears, we are in hurricane season, and we're going to hear from Kevin Peters, County Director of Emergency Management, in just a little later. But as we know, hurricane preparedness plans are just as important for your business and your organization as they are for your family. So we must be prepared, and I'm wanted to let you all know that OEV, the Office of Economic Vitality, is hosting a resilient strategies for sustainable business operations webinar tomorrow at 11:30. So again, it's a resilient strategies for sustainable business operations. I know that's a mouthful. And while you must register in advance, it is free, and it will provide you tools and information to help your business or your organization identify risks, develop a business continuity plan, take action in the wake of a hurricane or other emergencies. So there's a panel of really four stellar state and local experts, including Kevin Peters, who we're going to hear from in a bit. So you can access the registration for, this free webinar. It's tomorrow at 11:30 on our industry partner Facebook page, as well as the industry page on our website. So again, to make sure your business is hurricane ready, and it's a free webinar tomorrow from OEV that seems like it's got a stellar lineup, and you can come away with some real actionable items. So again, with this pandemic, as we are every week, everybody's learning, and these meetings are really providing that platform, shared learning, sharing knowledge, and sharing support for each other in our community. And I'm really happy to share with you all this morning that with this meeting today, we have reached a milestone that we have been holding these weekly meetings now for over 3 months. This is about our 3 months. We've been hosting these weekly meetings because we started right when the COVID-19 pandemic hit and hit certainly our industry and all of our lives like a tsunami. I mean, just was brutal. So today marks the 15th meeting. So again, want to thank you all. Many of you all have been with us from day one. So I want to thank you all for that. We have featured more than 33 speakers from the industry, from state and local, and a total of more than 525 folks participating in these meetings. Again, I want to thank you for being with us on this journey, albeit it's been but on behalf of the entire tourism team, I want to say thank you very much for being with us on these calls every week and on these meetings, because we are stronger together, and working together we will get through this. Again, really do appreciate you all being with us this morning and every week as you've been. So thank you very much. So as we do every week, we have several outstanding guest speakers. We got a great lineup this morning. And so we're going to hear from the speakers and then open it up to you all. So first on deck this morning will be Kevin Peters. He is the director of the Leon County Division of Emergency Management. He's going to give us an update on emergency operations and hurricane season. And next, For a return engagement, we are going to hear from Dr. Joseph St. Germain. He is the president of Downs and St. Germain Research. As many of you all know, it is a renowned research firm that's very fortunate for us, is based right here in Tallahassee and is actually our research firm of record. So he's got some new updates to share with us on consumer travel insights. And last but certainly not least, we are going to hear from Kathleen Spihar, the executive director of COCA. That, of course, is the Tallahassee-Leon County Council on Culture and Arts. Again, is doing a lot of really innovative things in the community and is a major stakeholder in tourism promotion. So she's going to share some updates on the COVID-19, kind of their programs and outreach that they've been doing. So we're going to start off with Kevin, then turn it over to Joseph, and then to Kathleen. So welcome, Kevin. Thank you very much for being with us.
All right. Hey, good morning, Carrie. Thanks for having us today here from the Emergency Operations Center. As you can see, we're socially distanced, so it's just me in the conference room this morning. Let's see. The share screen is, I can do that?
Yeah. Here. There we go.
And I think I'd do that, just a little bit of background. That way you don't have to see the conference table, I suppose. All right, yeah, so welcome to hurricane season. And it's been a bit of an active season already. We've set a season record, hurricane season record, already in 2020. This is the earliest we've been to our third named storm on record. In the past, it was we reached our C storm, Colin, back in 2016 on June 6th. But this year with Cristobal that formed in the Gulf of Mexico, that was the C storm on June 1st. So that's the earliest a hurricane season has had three named storms, with the two preseason storms we had, Bertha and Arthur, and then Cristobal forming on the first day of hurricane season. So that's kind of a record. Another record we've had here in Leon County specifically is this is the first hurricane season that our EOC had been activated on the first day of hurricane season for something other than a hurricane. We've been activated for nearly 100 days, coordinating with the Florida Department of Health in Leon County on our COVID-19 response for Leon County. We've facilitated well over 200 conference calls with our community's emergency response and healthcare partners to make sure that we are synchronizing our efforts with that of the Florida Department of Health. We've had over 4,000 participants on our conference calls over the last several months. Additionally, those include not necessarily the participants, but our participation in statewide conference calls with the Florida Division of Emergency Management through the state EOC, as well as different segments of the EOC at the state level with mass care and feeding and directly with the state's Department of Health on other COVID-19 issues. So records for us, definitely our longest activation, longest string for a state of emergency for the county, being activated on the start of hurricane season, as well as the hurricane season records from the National Hurricane Center. It's definitely been a record-breaking year to date. Through that time since March, we had the opportunity to plan for hurricane season as we dealt with COVID-19, routinely keeping an eye on hurricane season as we had those conversations with the state EOC and the Department of Health and FEMA, talking about how we may do sheltering this hurricane season and how we may have EOC operations in a safe and socially distanced manner. We definitely are looking at a different look to hurricane season this year with respect to response, but it's just as important as ever. These last 3 months of activation and our 213 recommendations for improvement from our previous hurricane season after action reports are putting us in a position that have us as ready as we can possibly be for hurricane season, and we look forward to whatever Mother Nature throws at us. Speaking of what Mother Nature may throw at us, the slide on the screen is the hurricane season outlook from the National Hurricane Center. It's calling for a bit of a busy season, 13 to 19 named storms, 6 to 10 hurricanes. Of those hurricanes, 3 to 6 could become major hurricanes, which are category 3 or greater. In the pie chart to the left, greater than 60% chance for seeing an above average hurricane season. To provide a little context that's not on the screen, a normal hurricane season is 12 named storms, 6 hurricanes, 3 majors. So Even in a normal season, by statistics speaking, things can be quite busy. So all that said, it doesn't really tell us much about what might happen in the Big Bend area, Tallahassee specifically. So it's very, very, very important to be prepared because we don't know exactly what of that, if any, will affect our region. Our season activity, it is most active between August and October. So as we think about planning and how we're going to react this hurricane season, we certainly want to be focused. You know, we don't want to let our guard down anytime this summer, but definitely between August and October are the most active times of the hurricane season. It peaks on September 10th. That's kind of the peak of hurricane season. Just as a point of reference, we've seen most of our most memorable storms during the August to October period, whether it was Faye in 2008, Hermine of 2016, Irma of 2017, Michael of 2018, Opal of 1995, Dora of 1964. Those were all storms that occurred between August and October. Probably one notable exception to that was Hurricane Kate in 1985. That was a November storm. So while we have a lot of stats to say things happen at certain times, just always have to be on the lookout for the outliers also. So we have had some additional fun though during the COVID-19 activation to get us ready for hurricane season. On April 23rd, there was a tornado that raced across northern Leon County as an EF1 with winds around 95 miles per hour. 47 homes received some level of damage. What that did, it did allow us to step up and bring our damage assessment teams online and go through that process and make sure we're very familiar with that. That's one of the things that we will do after hurricane season is get our teams out in the community and assess the damage following a hurricane. So it was an opportunity to practice that during COVID-19. On May 6th, we had a small wildfire, 4 acres in southern Leon County off Regiment Loop. It did threaten multiple homes. Fortunately, our Tallahassee Fire Department and the Florida Forest Service were able to take quick, decisive action, and they were able to contain the fire before it affected directly any homes. That did get us in a posture where we did have to start talking about our shelter plans should we have seen multiple homes lost during that fire. So we were able to have some very deep conversations with the Red Cross at that time and put together a shelter plan that we fortunately did not need. And then most recently, within the last couple of weeks, about a week or so ago, we were able to support our local law enforcement, the sheriff's office, the police department, highway patrol, Capitol Police, FDLE. They pulled together a law enforcement unified command team to coordinate the safety protection for our protesters in Tallahassee at the multiple venues they were protesting at in downtown. That law enforcement unified command took place here in the Emergency Operations Center. So it was an opportunity for us to test our social distancing rearrangement of the room. I know most of you probably haven't been in the EOC. Maybe some of you have had the opportunity, but I know Carrie and her team have been through it various times during the hurricanes. It's laid out differently than the last time you were here. We can't have the close proximity work this hurricane season. So we spread the tables out. We moved a lot of the chairs out to ensure that we have that 6-foot space in between staffing. And that was a good test. It looks like the layout we've come up with is going to work for protecting our staff. And not directly on previous experience, but things we've been working on is our sheltering plan for Leon County schools. I think most folks know that our schools serve as shelters during hurricanes. And traditionally, the planning factor is for 20 square foot a person per shelteree during an evacuation scenario. Due to COVID-19, we're going to up that number. We're planning for 70 square foot per individual. That's 3.5 times the space that we would have during a normal hurricane season. So we want to ensure that there's appropriate spacing for folks while they're in a shelter environment. That being said, it's going to require us to open a few more schools as shelters than we would normally would because we can't put as many people in any given shelter. So that's an ongoing coordination piece, but we are going to provide the best available space we can to ensure safety. And we do have a supply of PPE, personal protective equipment, for all shelteries and staff members that are working in our shelters. Something probably a little more specific to this group, the state of Florida's Division of Emergency Management is working on to arrange for agreements with hotels and motels statewide to provide what's called non-congregate sheltering. That's going to be a process that they're working on with agreements to provide hotel rooms to individuals that are most vulnerable in our communities, those with special needs, those that are the 65 or older, those that may already have been identified as being COVID positive, people that it may not be safe for them to congregate in a normal shelter setting. There's going to be a sign-up registration application process through the state, and we're working very closely on rolling that out with the state. We're not quite there. There's a few last steps that they are working on, but that's definitely something that Leon County and as well as our other 66 counties of the state are working very closely with the Division of Emergency Management to make sure it's a viable product for our communities. Let's see, a couple slides here, a couple things I just wanted to remind folks of. In a disaster, you never hear the citizens say you communicated with us too much. I just want to remind everybody, and I don't think I need to remind this group because you guys are a very well plugged in group. We have multiple sources of communications with our public, from our disaster survival guide that comes out every year to the Citizens Connect app, to our interactions with local media, to our emergency information website. And it's not showing on my screen, my little panel with all the faces are blocking it, but you might see his hand. We got a new member with the emergency management team. His name is Billy the Bucket. He is our official disaster preparedness mascot, and he's going to remind folks how best to build their bucket and be prepared for hurricane season. We didn't have the opportunity to do our standard Build Your Bucket program this year because of COVID-19, just not smart to bring a lot of folks together in a confined space. So Billy's carrying the message for us this year, and moving into the future as we emerge into whatever the new normal is for social gatherings. Billy is definitely going to be our ambassador to youth in our community to make sure that they get that education and that understanding of the importance of being prepared from an early age. He brings a new component to our public awareness campaign that we haven't had in the past. We've certainly seen how successful other mascots like Smokey the Bear have been for wildfire preparedness. We're hoping that Billy is able to bring our youth in this community to that level of understanding of how important it is to be prepared as they grow up to be adults and our future leaders. We hopefully plant that seed in them at an early age with our new mascot. You can follow him online at Real Billy Bucket. He's got a lot of tips out there already for you on Twitter. Another slide here about staying informed with trusted sources. Again, our Leon County Citizens Connect app, one of the best ways to stay informed, not just during hurricane season, but all year long, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Doesn't matter the hazard. If you've got access to the app, you're going to get the push notifications when something's going on from the Emergency Operations Center. As far as tropical weather and staying up with hurricanes, the best source is the National Hurricane Center. Going to their website, I can literally go to it every day during hurricane season and, you know, just throughout the year, honestly. www.hurricanes.gov. The emergency manager of Leon County gets his information there. You should, too. Again, just some reminders, individual preparedness is community preparedness. With that, when we're not in COVID time, we have a lot of opportunities for citizens engagement, and that's very important to us. Want to make sure folks understand what it means to be prepared. When it comes to hurricane season, you know, Leon County, we're an inland county, but very close to the coast. So I just wanted to throw this slide up to remind folks about the real hazards from hurricanes, though. It's storm surge. That inundation of water that comes in our coastal communities. The pie chart down here to the right shows tropical cyclone related fatalities, direct fatalities between 1963 and 2012. Storm surge inundation, that rush of water coming in along the coastlines, number one cause of death during tropical systems. If you work around some inland rainfall flooding, 27%, so you know, 3/4 of the deaths related to tropical systems revolve around water. If you go down, you know, you can see the winds are much smaller, 8% for just general wind, 3% tornado. Again, it's not zero. There still is a risk from wind, but it's the water that's the most dangerous aspect. So in the state of Florida, and as well as all of our coastal communities from the Gulf of Mexico around the Atlantic coast, our evacuation decisions are not based on wind. They are based on the risk for storm surge inundation. So I just want to make sure that, that people are aware of that. And so when you're thinking about evacuations and you're listening out for evacuation orders, mostly they're going to be geared towards those coastal areas. Now, that being said, we do have the uniqueness of being an inland county that has some storm surge inundation potential. Southeastern Leon County, under certain extreme storm scenarios, very rare, we could have storm surge inundation that comes up the St. Marks River Basin and affects areas around Woodville. Some of the science even says as far north as Tram Road, Old Plank Road area up to Tram Road, we could see some of that water spread out in the St. Marks River Basin. So we're not without risk here in Leon County for storm surge. It would be a very extreme scenario, but just wanted folks to remember when we're talking about evacuations, we're talking about the risk from water. Wind is a much lower risk. For the most part, staying in, site-built homes, having that safe room, interior room away from exterior walls and windows is going to keep you safe in your home. If you live in wind vulnerable housing, housing that doesn't meet any building code or mobile homes or something of that nature, you want to consider finding safer refuge during a storm. Again, there are a lot of sites throughout the state to help you find your zone. Wherever you're at in the state of Florida, you can get it. Local emergency manager's website, the state of Florida's emergency management website. You can see the different maps, find out what your zone is. And again, if you go, not so much for this group, but kind of general public thinking, there are tools from the National Hurricane Center on the left side of the screen, kind of the wind probabilities map, kind of the yellow areas, your highest risk areas. That was from Crystal Ball a few weeks ago. So if you were in the potential landfall area there somewhere in Louisiana or coastal Mississippi, you might have wanted to look going either kind of west or east, maybe to the Florida Panhandle or Texas if you had to evacuate. But that's not all. You want to look at the rainfall outlooks and that lower image there to the lower kind of down center bottom of the screen where the heavy rainfall was setting up. When you use that map with the winds, you can see Florida Panhandle wasn't the place to go. You needed to go west towards Texas because there was heavy rainfall from Louisiana all along the I-10 corridor. So using all the information that's available from the Hurricane Center's website can help people make good decisions about evacuations. And the slides on the right, again, highlighting the risk for wind vulnerable housing, a couple of mobile home pictures there that were affected by the wind, not the safest places to stay. And then the lower right, that's what a hurricane shelter typically looks like in a school gymnasium. It's not the rows of cots and things set out. It's very, very minimalistic, environment during those phases. So that's just when you're thinking about your evacuation plan or somebody's thinking about an evacuation plan. They definitely need to use all the information to make the best decision for them and their safety. Sum it up, stay informed, know your zone, stay safe. And I think that's what I had, Carrie. I'm going to stop sharing if that's okay.
Yep, that's perfect. Kevin, thank you very, very much. I love the Billy the Bucket. That's fun. I'm sure we'll have to bring him at some of the, when we are doing events again. Make sure he's at some of our events. So that's great.
Anybody have any questions? To be there.
Anybody have any questions? Okay. Well, again, very, very much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be with us this morning. Share some great information. Really appreciate that. And we are going to now turn it over to Dr. Joseph St. Germain of Downs and St. Germain Research, who knows firsthand about the tornado that came through that impacted, impacted their business up there, but they're doing great. I think Joseph was telling this morning that they are wrapping up all the construction, so that's good. So let's turn it over to Joseph St. Germain. Thank you so much for being with us.
Well, thank you. And as I go ahead and share my screen, yes, you can add at least one business to that list who had to deal with storm damage. But like she said, the silver lining was no one was here when it happened, so everything's okay. So I'll dive right in. Again, I'm Joseph St. Germain. I'm the president of Downs and St. Germain Research. As Carrie mentioned, I was here about 5-6 weeks ago, and to kind of help understand the sentiment of meeting plant, and I discussed the sentiment of meeting planners, what consumers are thinking on a national level, and then what consumers are thinking on in Florida. So I'll walk you through similar data, but it's interesting to see how things have changed over time. From a meeting planner perspective, we're starting to see a much more optimistic view of meetings. You know, from a few weeks ago, they were kind of, some people weren't even considering looking for meetings at that point, and now we're starting to see meeting planners starting to book. You know, largely if they're rescheduling, they're looking to 2021. If they're booking new events, they're looking to the back half of 2021. And again, every meeting planner is a little bit different, but when you talk to a lot of them, this is the general sentiment that we see. The next couple bullets are really kind of the, for what Tallahassee has in terms of product or meetings, is the best news. I mean, we continue to see the large national events people are shying away from in favor of local and regional events. And then suburban hotels and boutique hotels and resorts are best positioned to prosper. So these are places that, you know, Tallahassee has this product for these types of events. So it's a chance to possibly compete for events that on a, you know, on those large national scales, you may have not been able to compete before. Another thing that I mentioned last time, and that is still definitely the case 5 to 6 weeks later, is the importance of virtual for meeting planners. They want, you know, basically, you know, we've already seen a lot of conferences become virtual conferences. So kind of making that happen has been an important thing. And, you know, everything that we're seeing and reading is in terms of doing virtual tours, that really hasn't changed. Meeting planners are still hoping, would love to kind of do that. That way they don't have to do the travel in a time right now where people aren't totally accustomed to going back to the travel as it was. And then another way to stand out is meeting planners are looking for help on legal and health advisory services. I mean, I've given presentations like this and talking about data on consumer sentiment, and I'll get questions on, hey, legally, are we liable on, you know, if we contract COVID at the business, what should we do? As a general idea, asking a market research person what to do from a legal or medical perspective is a bad idea. So it really is what, I mean, but it's a very important thing that a lot of, you know, in the meetings that I've been in, business owners want to hear, but it's of particular importance to meeting planners because you are literally getting a lot of people in the same space together. So they're much more cognizant and really worried is the right word of what happens if, you know, we have an outbreak at our meeting. So having that available and having that understood is a very nice resource to have if you are a place that has meetings. I'm going to shift to consumers now, and I just want to give you some insight as to what we're hearing on a national level. You know, Karen mentioned a little bit ago that, you know, we're starting to see more and more cases. And so the optimism moving forward has started to decrease. I mean, overall optimism from consumers has been going up and up and up. It is starting to come back down as we're starting to see more and more cases. Another thing that I think is really important is people right now are drawn to places that they have visited before. And when I get to our Florida data in a little bit that we've done, you'll kind of see that sentiment happen again. The reason we're starting to see this is safety is so important. And part of safety is people feel safer in places they are familiar with. So as we've looked at where places that people are drawn to and where people are actually visiting, they've been there before. Their experience this time may be a little bit different, but they're still looking to focus their time and effort on places that they've been before. And we are seeing that media coverage matters. I mean, you know, in the tourism industry, we know this, but it's particularly important right now is overall, you kind of have, it's kind of like the adoption cycle of technology is what we're looking at in terms of tourism. There's early adopters, and all the way down to laggards, but you have a significant group of people who aren't quite ready to travel, but they will eventually. But that group, if they're getting towards thinking about travel, and if there was, you know, you could say any place in the world, if there's a lot of media coverage of all these people partying together, like we've seen at spring break in Southeast Florida or in the Ozarks a few weeks ago, that is an immediate no for a significant portion of the population. So that media coverage does matter. As we look at other consumer sentiment, people are still considering summer travel. That's starting to get pushed back a little bit. There's still a significant portion who want to travel this summer, but some of those summer trips are becoming fall trips. As we look at what they plan to do, eating out and shopping are at the top. We do a lot of visitor tracking studies with Tallahassee as well. Eating out and shopping are always towards or at the top. It's just an activity that people tend to do on vacation, so that's not surprising. However, after that, outdoor activities dominate, whether it's being on a lake or a river or an ocean, visiting parks, just going on outdoor activities or adventures, going on a hike or a bicycle. Those were numbers 3, 4, 5, and 6 as to what they plan on doing for summer trips. So that is something, again, great news for Tallahassee. These are things that people are looking for. It's things that Tallahassee has, and you know, it's something that you can promote. And then finally, there is a more positive sentiment towards travel and also having travelers come to people's communities. It's still not overwhelmingly positive, but it is, we have seen movement in that positive direction. So again, it's generally good news. It's open. People are being a little bit more positive, again, towards going out of their community and have people coming to their community. And my final slide, you know, we've done a lot of research within the state of Florida with Florida consumers. So I wanted to kind of give you some sentiment of what we're seeing from Florida consumers, just because that's such a huge part of the visitors to Tallahassee based upon data we've had previously. 5 to 6 weeks ago, I mentioned large attractions opening, restaurants and retail stores being opening, were really the big travel posts of like, hey, once I see that, I'll start considering travel again. And as you know, I mean, those things have started to reopen in Florida. And as they've reopened, it being a signal indicator has decreased a bit. It's still the top things that people are looking at, but it's less so. The one thing I will note for areas that are outside of Florida or even Georgia, because Georgia is fairly open, but in states and areas that are more closed still, they are still looking at the attractions, restaurants, and retail stores as their top indicators. So again, you know, things like, you know, you might think about Universal or Disney, again, how they do does matter for us here in Tallahassee. So just, it's something to keep an eye on, particularly for people outside of the state. Next, we found from like around Memorial Day on, a significant increase in leisure travel. You know, we've seen it from occupancy numbers in a variety of areas, and also consumer sentiment, and just asking the question, have you traveled recently? And that the overall number hasn't moved a ton, but the percentage you're doing it for leisure has increased dramatically. And we've noticed with the people who are actually traveling, they're going to places that they've known. Kind of things I mentioned a little bit ago with national sentiment, it's familiar, it's safe. Again, their experiences may be different, but it's still something that they know. This next, like for travel preferences, it still continues. People want to go to drivable destinations and outdoor and uncrowded destinations. Again, very positive news for Tallahassee. These are things, as long as they can drive to you, outdoor, uncrowded are things that Tallahassee can offer. And I'll elaborate again. This was said last time, but I want to hit it again. The destination website continues to be the top planning resource. And that isn't always the case. It's generally one of the top travel planning resources, but generally number one in all of our previous research was Google. I Google it, and here we go. But we keep seeing that the destination website is number one. And we're starting to see other research right now that says what they're looking for. You know, as we looked at one site, visitors are looking at first outdoor activities, then they're looking at restaurants, dining, hotels and accommodations, and then COVID-19 information. These were things that we really kind of assumed before, but now we're starting to get data that supports that. And to see outdoor come up number one, I think it's important because outdoor travel is always been an important niche, but it's something that people are doing actively searching for it now because we have a lot of consumers who want to travel. And even if they haven't done the outdoor experience before, this might be a time that they do it. But the important thing too is the COVID information. As I mentioned, you know, we've always had all the activities and restaurants and hotels on your website, but they're expecting COVID information on the website. Because basically, as I mentioned, they tend to be going back to places they are familiar with. But what they don't know if they're traveling, if they're a visitor from Tampa who's been to Tallahassee before, what they aren't sure of in Tampa is what's closed. You know, are public areas closed? Is that park that I love going to, is that closed? Is my favorite business or restaurant or hotel, is that closed? And also the status of shelter in place. So they're looking for those things that I mentioned. They want to know where the hours and restrictions of places of things that are open and closed, and just want to know the status, basically what's the travel status here. And one thing that I want to note, we continue to see more and more local residents looking at the like Visit Tallahassee and other DMO websites because their world has changed too. The things that they used to do in Tallahassee, they might not want to do now. So maybe they're looking for an outdoor experience that they may not have tried before. And I mean, I can speak to this specifically. When I was president of my Rotary, we sent out a weekly kind of newsletter as to what's going on for us. And at the bottom, we're like, hey, here's what's going on in Tallahassee. And I would just go to the Visit Tallahassee website, pick out a couple of things, and we'd be off and running. But we're seeing that more and more often as people are kind of relearning what's available in their areas. And finally, from a marketing perspective, I mean, the good news is people are more and more okay with the idea of being marketed to for a travel vacation. It's important to reiterate, they need to feel safe. That's the one thing when we ask them an open-ended question, what can a destination tell you to entice you to visit? They want to know that they're prioritizing safety. They want to know what are the new cleaning regimens, and they want to basically be told it's safe to come. And that's great. However, that's not necessarily sufficient to get them to come. So it'll be up to Carrie's team and all you other marketers out there you still need to inspire them to visit, but that safety message needs to be a part of a message, even if it's only in a small thing. I mean, I'm starting to see some ads for travel come up, and while safety is never mentioned, you know, the thought of showing someone checking in, wearing PPE and cleaning while they fall off, it's a way to subtly get it in there. So just those are things to consider. Safety is necessary, not always sufficient. Still need to inspire them to come. The good news is what consumers are looking for, Tallahassee has. So that's the good news. That brings me to the end, but I will open it up to questions if people have any.
Thank you, Joseph. Anybody have any questions for Joseph? Again, really appreciate the insight. Anybody have any questions? Okay, well, great information, Joseph. Thank you so much. Always appreciate you being here and sharing the insights. Again, very important for all of us. So thank you again for being with us, and thank you for all you and your team do for us with all of our data collection and analysis. So thank you so much.
My pleasure. Thank you.
Okay, great. Well, thank you. And so next, we're going to turn it over to Kathleen. So Kathleen, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, Carrie, thank you so much for the opportunity to share the news from COCA. So good morning, everyone. I'm here with my colleague, Erica Thaler, to talk about arts and culture. So COCA, the Council on Culture and Arts, is your local arts agency for Tallahassee and Leon County. We provide services, programs, and arts and cultural expertise, and have been tracking how COVID has tipped our community and sector into a completely new reality, actually an explosion of creativity. The arts tell the story of our community, and we've been muscling up with a lot of new content. So as this mashup has been happening of online experiences and activities, plus now dip our toe a little bit into live events that are starting to come back, Today, we're going to draw back the curtain and reveal what's new for you to offer. So take it away, Erica.
Hey, everybody. I'm Erica Saylor. I'm COCA's Communications and Marketing Manager, and I'm going to go ahead and share my screen, which everybody should see now. And what I'm going to show you is two different things. On the left side of the screen is a handout that I'm going to link into the chat later. And it's sort of the outline for what I'm going to show you on the websites. But all these different orange areas are hyperlinked, and so you can go back later to this document that we're going to follow along. So right now what I'm going to do is I am going to start with the website, which is TallahasseeArts.org. And we call this the Tallahassee Arts Guide because it's got a ton of resources for you, and it is much more than an event calendar. So the first thing on this site, when you go there, is you're going to see a prompt to sign up for COCA emails. And you can sign up for them. We actually have three different emails. I'm going to mention two. Mondays, we have a Tallahassee Arts Guide this week. And that shows all the event listings that are happening in the coming week. And that is a great resource for hoteliers, restaurants, cultural attractions. They can share this newsletter, or you can share this newsletter and let them know what there is to do. A new section of these newsletters is to include reopening guidance from Leon County. We've been reinforcing the Wear Your Mask campaign, a mask up tally, and trying to make sure people that know that this is a safe place to visit and go. The other email you can sign up for is our classifieds email, and I'll talk about that in a minute. But let's go to the next slide, which shows you some of the events. So you can click on events by category. And here, for example, we have upcoming music events. And it shows what's live, where they're located. You can actually see also what's canceled. We haven't deleted things. We've showed some canceled things, and those are starting to drop off again as new events are coming online. So that. Now we talk about our other newsletter, which you can sign up for, which is Classifieds. And it's another resource on our site. You scroll down and you hit Classifieds, you will see that COCA has a huge number of listings on our site. So these they live online, and they also go in our Thursday Classifieds newsletters. So you could browse listings from other users, you can learn about professional development workshops, things in our community, or you could submit your own listing if you wanted, for example, performers on your patio, if you wanted to do a mural, like the wonderful mural that's behind Deontay in his virtual screen. We have wait resources to connect you to artists. There's also a lot of planning guides for reopening and other community resources that we feature in this newsletter. So moving on to some programming, we have Behind the Scenes with COCA, and this is an adaption of an initiative we've been doing. And basically, Behind the Scenes is a self-service social media album where artists send to us what they're doing in their studios, and they have just loved this. These pictures go on social media, they tell us what they're doing, and it's a great way for us to let people know what our creative artists are doing. And we thank Visit Tallahassee for sharing this as well. I think it really tells the stories of our community in a really beautiful way. So that's Behind the Scenes. We also have COCA Spotlight, and this is a partnership with the Tallahassee Democrat. Our COCA writer works with individuals, does an interview and a story about them, and these are individuals in our community that are tied to an upcoming event, and we keep all of these on our website. And again, Visit Tallahassee has been kindly helping to promote them too. This is just another way to continue to tell the stories of the creativity that happens year-round in our community. In response to COVID-19, we've also created a series of articles called Creativity Persists, and these are not as much about individuals, but they are about activities and the way like organizations have changed, and they're a little more of stories. So we've got some interesting articles for you to browse there as well. And then I'm going to take you to our public art walks, and we think this is a really great opportunity for people to go and experience our art walks. There's a couple different pages. Again, they're linked over here on the left. But this is what our downtown public art walk page looks like. And it, I'm not going to click, but you can see a completely map route with all the artworks, download turn by turn directions. And we have this for both downtown and the All Saints area. And then we also have all of our outside art in the public art directory. We have over 200 pieces of public art. So if you want to put this on your site, let me know. We can help you get you know, a way to display that as well. And I'm going to turn it back to Kathleen. I'm going to drive, and she's going to chat about a couple other initiatives that we've put together in response to the COVID scenario.
That's right. Thank you, Erica. So TAG has got a lot of resources and curriculum also for what we kind of consider a DIY experience that you can set up in the arts and culture for your based on these new programs. So you can kind of embed this art then into your businesses as you see best. So we had talked about in previous tourism meetings, Poems to Go, which was launched in April, and that's online, and that includes some printable verses from local poets. You can, you know, attach them to go bags, restaurants, or with merchandise. You can take a poem and you can print it on your receipt you're giving out. You can feature a poem on a lobby screen on a hotel or restaurant. So that's just a little snapshot about some things and some ways Poems to Go can continue. We also have a new initiative called Sounds of Tallahassee, which was launched in May and is a crowdsourced soundtrack featuring local musicians from this area. So it streams 24/7 online, and it's available on just, if Erica, you can put a little cursor on a little, yep, a little button right there. And so that is how you access the music and the soundtrack. You can play it in hotel lobbies or restaurant patios or storefronts and so on. So it's just a couple of ideas. There's more information, but this is a couple I wanted to show with you today. The other thing that we also want to make sure we have time for today is that we're seeing museums and clubs and patios reopening. And so Erica is going to give you a little snapshot on what's happening.
Yes, I should have stopped the share. So what we're finding is when we first started responding to COVID, we found that our event producers were very, very quick to put their online offerings on, and they're still doing some really great programming. But now we see things opening. We see the Tallahassee Museum opening. Lemoyne Arts is opening with social distancing protocols. They're making sure they're putting that on their events. We have Gadsden Art Center open by appointment. Music venues are coming online. We have music from Junction on Monroe, Andrews Downtown, and again, in their descriptions, they're being very specific about what their protocols are. And then yesterday, we got a listing from Monticello Opera House, and Tallahassee Film Society has told me that they are going to open in July with 25% capacity with masks. And I just want to make sure everybody knows too, when you enter something on the COCA calendar, we're so grateful to have the partnership with Visit Tallahassee, because these events are automatically pulled to their site, and then they can approve them and list them too. So you know, event producers get double the exposure. I'm going to turn it back to Kathleen, but I just wanted to say really quickly, I'm going to paste some information in the chat while she's talking. So you will see that.
Thank you, Erica. Yep, you absolutely get a 2-for-1 when you put information on our site. So and we know that there's more to share. Like, we could go on about all the other events that are really starting to open up and blossom and so on, but it's best just to check out the site. So there'll be a few notes in the chat of this, you know, that Erica's putting there right now, along with our contact information. Our Facebook site, Instagram, Twitter. So just stay connected with us, and we'll be more than happy to help you figure out how you can integrate arts and culture into your business. And we will continue to make more updates as more openings and events happen throughout our community. So thank you so much, Carrie, to you especially, and your amazing Visit Tallahassee staff. We just really appreciate this opportunity to share arts and culture news with you today.
Great. Thank you so much, Kathleen and Erica. Really, truly, thank you for all you do for this community. COVID-19 obviously impacted all of us tremendously, particularly, I mean, certainly the tourism and hospitality, but arts and culture are the same way. And what you've been able to do and the Poems to Go, I think, is awesome. I think you had shared at one point, like you've distributed like 20,000 of them or something.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
And talk about adding value to the restaurant. I saw Greg Cohen from Lofty Pursuits was on the chat and saying that he loves the Poems, and I've heard it from numerous restaurants. So And that's just a great way to, again, be such an advocate and promoter for not just the arts, but artists that are in our community. So thank you. We do, and really do appreciate you all being here with us today. Let me open it up. Anybody have any questions or comments for Kathleen or Erica? Again, shared a lot of great resources. Does anybody have any questions or comments?
Please contact us if you want to chat or brainstorm.
That's great. Again, thank you, everybody. Thank you again to all of our great speakers today. Thank you. What a lineup. Again, thank you for taking the time to be with us today. And I'll open it up now just for anybody to have any comments, anything they want to share. Any additional information, anything that they want to share for the good of the whole, the good of the group? Okay, well, hearing none, so again, want to thank you all for being on the call today. Next week, we are going to have a return engagement as well from Claudia Blackburn. She is the director of the Leon County Health Department, again, to go right to the source for some information, more of the detailed information. And then we will have Mr. Mike Kelly, who's the fabulous director of sales at the very cool Holiday Inn, new property out on Appalachia Parkway, really doing some cool stuff with meetings too and groups. And again, so we're going to meet him next week. And also Michelle Personette, the executive director of the Challenger Learning Center, will also be with us to talk about, again, how they have had to adapt, and certainly the impact that they have had, and again how they have been innovative and kind of pivoted in all that they are doing. So again, we've got another great lineup next week. Again, please continue to be safe, focus on the future, and for the health of others in our entire community, please remember to wear a mask when you're indoors or in public. Again, it's really not too much to mask. So again, thank you very much for that. This Friday is Juneteenth, so happy June. That is Independence Day, Emancipation Day for granting freedom to enslaved people is this Friday, again, Juneteenth. And then happy Father's Day to all the dads. It's Father's Day weekend. So again, happy Father's Day to everybody. Thank you for being with us this morning, and we'll see you next week. So stay safe, stay healthy. Thanks, y'all.